And now the opinion page. The Michael Douglas character in the movie Wall Street famously declared, "Greed is good." But Gordon Gekko got it all wrong, writes Los Angeles Times columnist Gregory Rodriguez. It's not greed that's good, it's envy. In today's dismal economy, where millions can't find work, Rodriguez argues that plain old envy can drive the economy. It can inspire people to try harder to make it up to the next level, or even just to keep up with the Joneses. And now is just the time to everybody get to work and become envious. Has there been a time when envy benefited you? Tell us your story, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation at our website and find a link to Gregory Rodriguez's op-ed. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. And Gregory Rodriguez joins us from the studios of Marketplace in Los Angeles. Nice to have you back on the program.
Thanks, as always, for having me.
Envy, as I recall, is one of the seven deadly sins. And if you equate it with coveting, it doesn't come off well in the Ten Commandments either.
Absolutely. It's a destructive force of people wanting to tear down others. But I think we may find it also has its positive sides. It has its benefits in a highly competitive society.
You talk about people finding distinctions between malicious envy and beneficial envy.
Well, yeah, I think more recently, social psychologists have begun to look at what the end purpose of that envy is. And if malicious envy is simply trying, it's disdaining the gap. It's trying to level the difference between you and someone you admire or aspire to be by tearing that person down. Mm-hmm. Whereas benign envy would be the attempt to level the gap between you and the person you admire by lifting yourself up.
So one of them is sort of resentment. I can't stand that person because they drive a big fancy car. And the other is, as you say, envy. How can I get me one of those?
Well, but they're hard to disentangle. So even in the benign envy, presumably there is resentment. There's plenty of, as I write in my column, Horatio Alger stories are just as likely to be driven by, damn, I want the life of my damn boss, mm-hmm. as it is by, you know, pulling yourself up by your bootstraps.
Yeah, the
it's leveraging that negative resentment to a positive end.
But it's negative resentment all along.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's the point of whether the resentment is focused on tearing the other person down, or the resentment is actually used to actually push yourself up.
And if you use it in that second aspect, then you get the socially beneficial effect.
Absolutely. I mean, I was really struck by this silly little fight between Sarah Palin and Barbara Bush and this notion of class warfare, and how everybody, I mean, nobody really embraces the notion that class warfare may in fact be good at times. And it's in fact a leverage. It moves people to act. It moves people to, it aspiring elites. Elites have always sought to depose established elites. So I was just struck by the extent to which class warfare is seen as such a negative force, when in fact there are moments in which it's actually beneficial.
And then class warfare on both sides. The left typically soak the rich, and as you say, the right, those elites, well, they think they're better than we are.
Absolutely. But even on the left at this point, I mean, I think you'd be hard-pressed to find people who'd come out and say, you know, class warfare actually has its benefits. And I'm just trying to be honest here and say, you know, this is a negative emotion that, when leveraged appropriately, can lead people to move in their best interests.
We're talking with Gregory Rodriguez about the social benefits of envy. If there's been a time when this has benefited you, give us a call. 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. Paul's on the line from Denver. Paul, you there?
Yes, I am. I just wanted to say that when I was about 17 or so, and I was working in a bike shop, and I had dropped out of high school and was trying to figure out what I wanted to do, and I had a colleague, a guy that was working there who had just graduated from college, and we became pretty good friends, and he always impressed me as being very organized and really smart and knew how to do all kinds of things, and I was really impressed by that, and I was just like completely overcome, really, almost jealous. I don't know whether jealousy is really the right word, but I was very envious of all the things that he knew how to do, and that inspired me to go to college.
So you went back to school to be like your friend?
Yeah.
Did it work out?
Yeah, I got a degree in math after about 15 years.
Well, I guess you can add up the benefits now.
Yeah, yeah. So, it worked out, yeah.
That's interesting, and thanks very much for the call. I'm glad it worked out for you, Paul.
Sure.
There is all kinds of, well, that interpersonal stuff where you say, gee, if I could just be a little bit more like my friend Joe, I'd be much better off.
Yeah, it's really more power to Paul for admitting that. I mean, this is not something we go around admitting. We have a nice phrase, keeping up with the Joneses, but we don't really talk about what really feeds that need to keep up, and to the extent that which that really motivates us. It's how we compare ourselves to others, whether it's a coworker in a bike shop or how we compare ourselves to others who we see on television.
And again, you can see to some degree the economic benefits of keeping up with the Joneses, but this is also not necessarily put in a positive light. It's sometimes put in the category of grasping materialism. We want an Edsel because the Joneses have one.
It absolutely is grasping materialism. But during bad times, don't we wish we had that more opportunities for grasping materialism at the moment?
Let's see. We get John on the line. John's calling us from Tampa.
Hey, how are you doing? Yeah, I'm a doctor. I used to be an engineer, and I've worked very hard, I think, partly because of this envy, wanting more and more. And I was just saying that that's definitely motivated me. I spent about 15 years of my life in school, from age anywhere from 21 to, you know, in my late 30s, and finally came out with a dermatology residency from USF. And that definitely is a big motivating factor, is all these nice things that you see other people having.
And so you've stuck with it, and have you succeeded?
Oh, very much. Yeah, I'm making more money today than I ever thought I would have, even in medicine. I have a feeling, too, that sometimes when you do succeed, then the success, especially if you're a driven person, then once you reach a certain plateau or a certain level, then you can always want more. I'm a type A person. I'm go, go, go. And I think that it can turn to more of a greedy situation where you just feel like you never can earn enough.
It's interesting because you would say, you might start out saying, boy, if I could only be a doctor, and then you become a doctor, you say, boy, I really want to be a surgeon. And then you realize, you know, I really want to be one of the top five. So there's always another plateau.
Yeah, and it's difficult to overcome, you know. And especially nowadays with the investments that people have made, a lot of people have worked really hard and then just lost it. And that can be very devastating to people who, you know, like I always say to my, you know, better half, and like, oh, geez, I lost $1 million. And she always keeps reminding me. She says, well, you know, hey, John, you've got a better job than 99% of the people I know.
Well, John, congratulations on that. And thanks very much for the phone call.
Okay.
Bye. This is from Danny in Florida. I experienced beneficial envy. My ex-girlfriend was losing interest in me and started to show more attention to other people, thinner, more fit people, which led me to be envious of the attention. So I became determined to lose weight and, in fact, lost 30 pounds. The resentment was used to push myself to stay on track and leave her, he writes. But we may be going over the line from envy to jealousy there, I think, but we don't want to judge motives, I guess. Let's see if we get Anne on the line. Anne's on the line with us from Cape Cod.
Yes, actually, this almost builds on the previous caller, the physician, and what he was talking about. I think that there's a negative side to envy that contributes to the current economic situation we're in when you talk about keeping up with the Joneses, and how many people do you know that drive cars that maybe they can't afford or bought homes that maybe they really couldn't afford because of envy and because of that desire to constantly look better. And so I think there's a double-edged sword to what the author's talking about that needs to be considered.
Oh, well, Gregory Rodriguez, I think you would agree.
Absolutely. I mean, by and large, envy is something that society should not encourage. I mean, it is a destructive emotion. It does tend to lead people to tear each other down. It does tend to lead people to judge themselves and their well-being in comparison vis-a-vis others, which isn't a healthy thing to begin with. And religious traditions, all sorts of civic traditions lead us and try to mute the negative effects of envy. We teach children in elementary school to send Valentine's Day cards to everyone, so no one feels envious. We tell people that's not about winning or lose. Playing baseball as children is not how you win.
Everyone's
you win
a winner.
Or lose is how you play the game.
Yeah, exactly. Right. But we don't really mean that.
Well, we do mean that. We do need to tamper it. We do need social mechanisms and ideological mechanisms to keep people from tearing each other apart.
Even in those soccer games where the grown-ups don't keep score, the kids keep score.
Well, absolutely. But there is that need to try to fight against that pettiness. What I'm saying is that there are moments when that pettiness is actually a value.
Anne, thanks very much for the call. It's a good point. Here's an email from Alyssa in Farmington Hill in Michigan. When I was in college at Michigan State University, I was a trumpeter in the marching band. My freshman year, I didn't have a very good chair and was envious of those at the top of the section that got to rip fun musical lines. That envy drew me to practice harder and take lessons, which enabled me to come back my next three seasons and earn a chair at the top of the section. And there you go. That's the kind of competition where, not everybody gets the gold medal at the end of the season. Somebody has to be at the top chair. And there are a lot of competitions like that in our lives, aren't there, Gregory?
Absolutely. And in fact, it's deeper. I mean, it's all these prizes, awards, comparisons. And part of this, in a democratic society like ours, in which we believe in the notion of equality and the equality of all people, that means inequality offends us. And essentially, the core of envy is this desire to close the gap of inequality between us and others. So this is part and parcel of certainly democratic and capitalist culture. And it's particularly strong in U.S. culture.
Gregory Rodriguez, a columnist for the Los Angeles Times. You can get a link to his In Praise of Envy piece at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And in a way, you're talking about envy and its beneficial and malicious aspects, but we're really talking about human nature here, aren't we?
Absolutely. And we're talking about human nature and the extent to which we as a society seek to control it or to leverage it. And that's the point here. There are moments when as I mentioned before, when traditions seek to keep people from being envious. And there are moments in which things like class warfare and politics, that sort of rhetoric, may actually be beneficial to keep people moving and keep people aspiring, keep people on the site and the possibilities of better things ahead of them.
There are also times when this is justified. Every once in a while, I suppose the rich do need to be soaked a little bit.
Well, I'm not going to go there, but I think it's a perfectly wonderful sentiment to say, hey, those I can't say this on the radio. You know, I really the core of it is I hate them. I wish I were them.
Mm-hmm. And as long as you are aspiring to be them, as you say, the Irish Poles who sought to displace the Brahmins in Boston of old, the Jews who outworked the WASPs in New York to become the new aristocracies.
Absolutely. And it's leveraging that resentment. And it's really, I mean, sometimes it's in the guise of hating the rich, as I mentioned before. But it's really just resenting the fact that you're not one of them. And this is how the society seems to work. The unusual and the extraordinary fluidity traditionally of the society has been on people seeking to displace others. And that's the history of our neighborhoods. That's the history of our class system. And as we see things, the possibilities for mobility wither away, I'm saying, you know, Let's push the envelope a little bit. Let's talk a little bit more about class warfare just to get people's engines going.
And you quote de Tocqueville to suggest this is a quintessentially American idea as opposed to the idea of the leveler. Let's bring everybody down to the same level.
Absolutely. Tocqueville mentioned it. He was struck that he'd never met anyone so poor in the United States that they didn't actually not want to be the people who had all the good things ahead of them. He was struck that they weren't actually demeaned by their poverty in the sense that they really still sought to be those people that looked down on them.
Let's go to Margaret in Morristown, New Jersey.
Hi. How are you?
Very well. Thank you.
I came to this country 15 years ago from Eastern Europe, from Poland. I graduated college with the master's degree in Poland, but like 90% of the people who come here, I wasn't able to, of course, work in my profession in here. So it took me 10 years to get my green card, and I always envy one thing from all my friends, basically, who are the second and third generation immigrants from Europe. They basically went to school here so they could do whatever they can. So after I got my green card, My husband went back to school first, got his master's degree in physical therapy, and I was the second one to follow with the 10-month-old baby, and that was in, I graduated in 2007, and now I am working and cannot be more than happy than I am.
So we've gotten a call from Horatio Alger.
Absolutely.
I'm sorry, I couldn't understand what you said.
There's an old American series of stories about a mythical or fictional character named Horatio Alger who pulled himself up by his bootstraps and made a good life for himself by going out on his own and fixing things for himself. So, Margaret, you and your husband have done that.
Yes, we did, and we're still way behind with our friends who are able to go and enjoy vacation, but we can do whatever. Basically, we make choices, and right now we can do what we wanted to do. We're working with people, both of us, and we are very happy. Cannot ask for any more, and I probably will be not the first one to say that this is still the best country in the world. When you can come from a country like Poland, when you don't speak English, and after 10, 15 years, you can go back to school, and you can enjoy very good life in here. This is cannot happen anywhere else.
Margaret, congratulations. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate the phone call. So, Gregory Rodriguez, it's still the land of the free.
Absolutely. It's still the land of the free, and it's also good for us to hear stories like that.
Gregory Rodriguez, thank you for your time today.
Thanks, as always.
Gregory Rodriguez, columnist for the Los Angeles Times. You can read his piece, In Praise of Envy, through a link at our website that's at npr.org. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.